Hey, everybody, this is Brandon, and Rick and Morty is off the air, but Travis and I are still doing Apathetic Enthusiasm, which is our show talking about pop culture and other stuff. So if you're interested in listening, here is the first episode of that. You can find Apathetic Enthusiasm everywhere, but for now, it's here on this feed. So anyway, hey, we'll see you next season, or right now if you want to. Okay, bye.
You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
In this episode, we make an Apathetic Enthusiasm. I'm pretty sure we still know how to do this. We talk about Glass Onion and Andor and hot peppers. It's the show. Hi, everybody. I'm Travis.
Hey, everybody. I'm Brandon. And welcome to Apathetic Enthusiasm. We haven't done an episode of this since July of 2022.
Holy... It's been 6 months.
It's been 6 months since you recorded with me. It's been six months since we recorded an Apathetic Enthusiasm because we were too busy talking about Rick and Morty over on
busy
interdimensional RSS.
Here's what I want to know. I want to know what the Venn diagram is of the audience for Apathetic Enthusiasm and the audience for interdimensional RSS. And I feel like there's a lot of overlap there. But then there's just this like crescent moon of listeners who only listen to AE. They only listen to this show. They have zero interest in Rick and Morty.
I bet the ratio of people who listen to only this and don't listen to the Rick and Morty stuff at all it's like Earth to the universe, right? Like that's how big a sure. difference it is.
But we're thankful for you. Sorry, we've been gone so long,
Bob Carroll.
Bob, sorry, Bob.
Sorry, Bob.
I sent you a picture of his love note to us after the 1 year anniversary of this podcast, which we have now been making for over 200 episodes. Like I think over 10 years now, or we're getting close. We're coming up on a decade.
2015 is when we started.
2015.
That's what's on my resume anyway. Yeah.
Good. Glad you're including this on your resume. Anyway, if we happen to go on hiatus for another 6 months, there are plenty of ways that you can follow us. We still have somewhat of a presence over on Elon's social space. We're at Apathusiast. He's at Barnyard Cruise. I'm at Jugglemino. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/apatheticenthusiasmshow. Send us an email, apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com. Over on Instagram, apathetic_enthusiasm. And then, of course, our website, apatheticenthusiasm.com, where you can still find this show and all the other shows that we dabble in as well. Hello to all of our friends watching live on Twitch, twitch.tv/apatheticenthusiasm. Had a lot of folks join us for interdimensional RSS for some of those episodes. So hopefully you guys come back, be part of the show. This is a much more loose improvisational feel as I like belch in the middle of these tags. Anyway, be part of the show. We'll include you in the conversation. And then, of course, if you missed the live stream, but you still want to catch the video, you can go to youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm. Catch video versions over there. Like, subscribe, do all those fun things. Finally, our Patreon, patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm, where patrons can get exclusive content.
Ooh.
To include.
Ooh.
Someone that just won't lie down.
Won't Lie Down, the song by Face to Face. Whenever I start wanting to record something, I always end up going back to that song because I know all the parts to it. I know sure. The guitar, and I know the bass, and I know the drums. And so it's really, and I know all the lyrics. So I'm like, let me put them all together. And so whenever I get a wild hair, that's what I usually tend to record that, or Pictures of Shorelines by Further Streams Forever. But the other day, I got this wild hair to like, you've seen those videos on like TikTok or Instagram stories of like people playing different music or instruments, right? And putting them together or reacting to each other. So like in the back of my mind, I'm always like, how do they do that? And earlier that day, I was helping out the job I'm the company that I'm with right now do video stuff. So I'm like, well, I'm in this video mode already. Let me see if what I can put together. And so I sat down behind the drums and I set up my iPhone on a little tripod. And I recorded the drums. And then I was like, well, how am I going to play along to that? Because normally I try to like just play along to my phone, but then the Bluetooth headphones for the phone are always kind of like off. And so it's never synced up perfectly.
Yeah, it doesn't sync right. Yeah.
Right. But what I found was, oh, okay, well, I could take that video from my phone, airdrop it to my computer, and the AirBuds from the computer, I can now play along to that instead of to the phone. And then the phone can be recording me play that stuff. So that's how I did it for each of the parts. And what I was surprised by was the mix of the live speaker from my drum amp, from the guitar, from the bass playing in there. It was a surprisingly good mix on its own. And I was like, I didn't have to do much post-production on that stuff at all. I'd mess with some of the levels of the vocals because, let's face it, it's the part I'm most insecure about is
because you are the one singing.
I'm most insecure about. So I just mess with some of those levels, but I'm like, oh, this is fun.
If I had to give any feedback on the video, and again, if you want to see this video, you can go to patreon.com/apathicenthusiasm. But I feel like you are a good singer when you commit. And I think you let that insecurity get to you a little bit in the production. So you started doing the Brandon thing, which is let me be a little bit weirder when I'm singing. And then it kind of adjusts some of the vocals in that way. But I thought it was a great video. And yeah, you're super talented. You're more talented than I could ever hope to be. I can't play one of those instruments. So, and you did three plus sang. So.
But you know how to do a pocket operator. And I mean, that's an instrument as well.
Meep moop. I'm trying to hold it up to the camera. Meep moop. Yeah, I do want to make some mixes on the pocket operator. I was cleaning what my family lovingly calls the clawfus.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are new to this show or new to the inner workings of my life, then you would know that I record all of this from my walk-in closet. That's right. This area that you see behind me, if you're watching a video version of the podcast, is a corner of my closet. And we were hiding like a bunch of Christmas presents and stuff in here for the holiday, you know, extravaganzas. And so when Christmas was over, it was like, cool, I can clean everything up. And then I was like, oh, let me rearrange some things. And I got like a new little shelf that I could put more pops and other crap on. So I was like, oh, let me clean all this up. And in that process, I start going through things. I'm like, oh, here's my pocket operator. Oh, here's my video camera from the early 2000s. Here's all this other random stuff. And then I get distracted and I'm pulling SD cards out of 10-year-old cameras and being like, oh, there's a weird vlog my kids did when they were toddlers. Okay, cool. That's weird. But yeah, so I found the pocket operator, and much like you, I'm incredibly insecure about my singing. So whenever it's time for Dan Harmon's social media minute, I am more than happy to play pre-recorded audio. And yeah, so I'm going to start mixing some up on the old pocket operator.
Nice. Which it's gonna be great, and I think it's a good segue, because I'm gonna put this episode on our Ram feed as well.
Hello Ram listeners.
Just so you know, and after we're done recording, we're gonna record.
It's time for semi pertinent news. I'm sorry.
We're gonna record an intro for the episode on the feed. That way, when people come listen to it, they're not like, what the hell is going on? So we're going to do like a quick intro. And now I'm in this episode, we're talking about planning that intro. So now you will have
that intro that you heard at the beginning of this. This is where I found out about it.
Yes. Uh-huh. This is where the idea generated. Anyway, so welcome listeners of RAM, International RSS, to this podcast. This is our podcast. This is just Travis and I, where we talk about whatever's on our mind, you know, kind of just
going on,
kind of us hanging out, right? And, normally we try to have a main topic, and today, you know, he said it in the intro, and we might as well get into it. We don't have fancy transition music or even beatboxing, even shitty beatboxing to transition the topics.
We just awkwardly call out our transitions before they happen.
Yeah. Here we go. Our first transition.
Movies.
Movies. Well, first of all, happy 2023 to everybody out there.
Happy 2023. Any resolutions, Brandon? Anything you're trying to do differently in the new year? Or are you past that in your life? You don't need resolutions. You're resolved to live your life.
I think it's okay to be free from the belief that we're going to stick with resolutions anymore.
That's fair.
You know, I mean, did you think to yourself, I'm going to make a resolution this year and I already blow it?
My resolution was to be more prepared for podcasts, and we've already screwed that up. So,
yeah,
no, I really didn't. I didn't think explicitly about any resolutions. I mean, there's things I could always be better at. I am thinking a lot about my health and about fitness and things like that, just because this is the year, much like you last year, where I turned 40. So, you know, it's a big milestone, and I want to, you know, be around for, you know, another 40 or so if possible. You know, being more healthy, making sure I stay active. But then again, I also got like a bar set for Christmas. And so I've been making, mixed cocktails at home, which is not something I used to do in the past. So drinking less is certainly not a resolution for me.
That's cool, man.
Looking forward to new opportunities and being open to whatever happens in the next year.
That's great. I'm happy to share this journey with you and into 2023 with health and good tidings.
Hey, did you run that long race that you were supposed to run last year?
No, I know. Like, I was supposed to run it, and then I got sick that week, and like I'm just now finally feeling better. Like I went for like a mile run a couple days ago, and like finally I did it. And so it's not a resolution, but I do want to continue running and eventually get to that 10 miler that I was supposed to have run. So virtually anyway, I changed it to a virtual run, and I still didn't do that either.
Yeah. But I would like to put more distance on my shoes for sure. Okay. So I slacked off the last half of 2022. So yeah, maybe,
Let's do that.
Let's run more
a mid 2023 run together, you know, when we hang out.
Okay. What are we talking? Talking half marathon? What are we talking?
Yeah. Well, let's just do a 10 miler. You know, just a 10 miler.
10 miler.
Mm-hmm.
10 miles.
10 miles. Let's hold ourselves to it.
I still might sign up for a half marathon in April.
You're dumb.
Yeah, I am. Happy 2023. How did you celebrate? Did you do anything fun? Did you get together with anybody?
No. Well, yes. Didn't get with anybody. Hung out at the house with the family. Watched the Twilight Zone marathon. It was all
as is the cruise way.
As is the way. This year, they included three episodes of the Jordan Peele reboot that was on Paramount Plus, and they showed it in black and white. They showed those episodes in black and white, which I really really appreciated. I'd only watched one episode of the reboot, and that was the one with Kumail Nanjiani in The Comedian. I never watched any of the other episodes because I just wasn't super interested. But I liked the three that we saw on the marathon this year. So that was cool.
Very cool.
And then you know, just hung out, just hung out with the family, yeah. You know, updated my resume. Those, you know, things we do on New Year's Eve.
The classic New Year's traditions, like updating your resume, refreshing the profile on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Good. But yeah, also, I hung out with the neighbors. They had a ping pong tournament, which I didn't know was going to be a thing. Doubles. So me and the old wifey, walking in off the street.
Yeah.
Like, sure. Yeah. Pencils in for the tournament. We won the whole thing. I feel now obligated. Like, I have to go back to their house next year for New Year's.
Did you run it? Where was it you?
Did I run the tournament? No.
Yeah. I mean,
it wasn't even my, no, I,
no, no, I'm not saying, did you run it? I'm saying like, did you run the table and did Sheena just sit over to the side where you did everything?
Oh, Sheena was clutch in some key situations.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was really wondering there.
No. But there was a point where, one of the games was getting very close to the end and my face like went from, we're having a good time to like, okay, we're winning this ping pong game. Like the competitive side of Travis came out, which I don't love that like we're all having fun. And then I didn't like yell at anybody. Like I didn't get like enraged or anything.
Cross the line. Doesn't count. Cross the line.
This isn't federal ping pong regulations. What's going on here? It was all in good fun. But yeah, I'm just saying now I feel obligated to defend the title next New Year's. So I don't know. I guess we'll see. We'll see how plans change in the next 300 something days.
There was something going into the new year that we're all pretty excited about. And this is a segue to an actual point of the episode, which is Glass Onion, the Rian Johnson sequel to Knives Out, not a Knives Out mystery, which he doesn't like that Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery either. It was out in theaters for a month or so. And I wanted to go see it. And then I was like, oh, it's coming to Netflix. Was it on like the 30th or like 31st, something like that. Like not too long ago. Yeah. And so I was excited about that. I wanted to see it, and then it came to home, and I didn't have to go anywhere to do it. So I watched it. You watched it yesterday, I wanted to talk a little bit about that because I know you love a good murder mystery and heist. Those two things.
I like the original Knives Out. I thought it was interesting doing almost like a spiritual sequel, right? Or like it had some over like an overlapping character. But I like a good ensemble heist mystery type show or movie. So I was interested in seeing it, not interested enough to go and see it in the theaters. But I was excited when it did finally hit Netflix streaming and fired it up, watched it with my eldest and my wife. And one thing I noticed right off the bat is my oldest child is not used to watching those types of movies with me because she was asking all these questions. And I was like, let's watch the movie and see if it tells us the answer.
Oh, man. I hate that.
Yeah. So that was a cool learning experience. I thought the movie was good. I thought the cast was great. Sheena didn't really know what to expect going into it. So as they're introducing all of the main characters, just like one after the other, she's just like, oh, like every time they introduce a new person. So obviously Catherine Hahn, one of the first that we see, who she knows as Agatha from WandaVision. And then I think we see like Kate Hudson. Who else was in there? Obviously Dave Bautista. Oh, and Leslie Odom Jr., who you never actually watched Hamilton, right?
No, I watched it. I know he was. I know he was.
His Aaron Burr.
Aaron Burr. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. My oldest was obsessed with Hamilton when it was at the peak of its popularity, and excuse me, it took her about half the movie to realize that was Leslie Odom Jr. So, thank you, Grumpy Shih Tzu, for the subscription. Ooh, big subscription, 10 months.
You're great. You're Red Black.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I mean, really awesome. Rounding out the cast, obviously Edward Norton, who has been a favorite actor of mine for years and years and years. Daniel Craig as what is it?
Benoit Blanc.
Benoit Blanc. Yeah, that's right. And then Janelle Monáe, as we turns out to be a couple of characters, as we find out. I'm dropping spoilers. I thought it was really good. I liked the tone of it. I like a movie that requires me to pay attention so that I can be looking for clues and things like that. I don't know. What did you think about it?
Oh, what did I think about it? I liked it a lot. You mentioned like spiritual sequel. Like it is, it's like the Pink Panther and A Shot in the Dark, which like Pink Panther, I used to say A Shot in the Dark is basically a Pink Panther movie. Like it's a Pink Panther sequel, which I get called out like, but it's not a Pink Panther movie because the Pink Panther diamond isn't even a part of it. Like, yeah, but Clouseau's in it. Yeah, but Pink Panther's not in it. Pink Panther movies are their own movies. Anyways, that's a whole thing. But so Shot in the Dark and Pink Panther, they're sequels to each other, but using the character of Clouseau to time. So same thing with like this, or say like Death on the Nile or Murder on the Orient Express with a Poirot. It's the detective and he's solving a new murder. Same thing with Knives Out and Glass Onion. It's Blanc, he's doing all that stuff. So after seeing Knives Out, it was coming off like the heels of The Last Jedi. I had never seen Brick. I'd seen something Rian Johnson. Maybe he did Looper. I think he did Looper with Bruce Willis and the three named dude,
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
So you know the
trivia about Joseph Gordon-Levitt, right? With Rian Johnson movies,
he's in all the Rian Johnson movies.
His voice is featured in every one of his movies.
Yeah. In some way, shape, or form,
in some way
to include this. Anyway,
Do you know what his voice was in this movie?
Yeah. It was like I know what it was. My brain's not right there thinking about that right now.
It's the gong.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, cool.
You're welcome. Right. Back to your
coming off of The Last Jedi. Here's a Rian Johnson movie. Let's go ahead and check it out. And I really liked it. And then I'm like, okay, this is very, very good. And I saw a Vanity Fair like YouTube thing where he's breaking down a scene of Knives Out just as a director. And he's just so super, he's very knowledgeable. He's like explaining it. He's like, here's the eye line. Here's the levels of power. You know, I wanted a light coming in from this angle to do this. And he breaks down in the opening scene, one of the opening scenes of Glass Onion as well. Because he did a sequel to that Vanity Fair video. It very competently made movies. They're very, very, very good. And I like in this one, the whole plot is Edward Norton is a tech billionaire and he's inviting all his douchey friends, as Rian Johnson says, like to his private island. Blanc ends up going. Is invited as well, so he goes to the island as well. And the whole thing is Edward Norton wants to do a murder mystery where he's the one who gets killed. And so how this all plays out, I thought was very, very good, because Blanc is not the protagonist in the first movie. It's the assistant. So changing the perspective to be from his side was an interesting choice. And then what happens in the middle of the movie where a perspective kind of shifts as well, also is a pretty cool technique. Anyways, what I loved about it is who the killer ends up being. I thought it was cool because it was the whole purpose of the movie, The Glass Onion, right? Which is like the glass onion is, it's supposed to be very, very layered, like an onion. There's layers. There's so many different aspects of it, but you can see right through it. You can see the center of the mystery. So yeah, I love the way it was resolved in that way.
Yeah. I thought it was really good. And I think it subverts your expectations a couple of times. And some of the biggest mysteries as they are solved in the movie, they aren't necessarily solved in a conventional way or the way that you would expect them to be, which I found really interesting. And I thought the overall resolution of the movie and the outcome for the characters, it sat well with me. So ultimately, I really enjoyed the movie and thought it was really good.
Yeah, it's a movie you can sit there and just abbreviate how important it is from a directorial technical standpoint.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
I'm gonna ask you one more thing about this movie.
Sure,
because
please do.
It came out in 2022, late 2022, but it takes place in around March, April of 2020. This is a movie that is now 2 years removed from the start of the coronavirus pandemic, but it takes place in a time where, like, the pandemic was very fresh. Like, this was the period of time where we were, like, washing all of our groceries before they were delivered to our house, because and we didn't leave our houses for like weeks because we didn't know what was going on or how to treat it or anything like that. It's the first time I feel like, for me as a viewer, I've watched that period of the pandemic as like a period piece. And it was really interesting to me to look at how different characters were responding to it, how different characters, even down to, there's a scene very early on, and they're all meeting on a dock to take a boat to this private island. And they all have masks on, right? And some of them are wearing them. They all have different styles of mask. They all have different ways that they're wearing them. Some of them, you know, nose exposed. Other people, like, not wearing them at all. Some people, like, can we hug? Can we not? And it's really interesting to me to see those behaviors played out in a movie. And obviously, they kind of write out the idea of COVID very quickly because they all get some sort of billionaire immunity very quickly. And then it becomes an afterthought after that. But I thought that first, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of the movie where they're responding to COVID in different ways, I thought was interesting. And I'm curious if that's something that we'll continue to see writers and directors portraying, or if that's something that's already going to kind of be like, all right, we're not gonna deal with that. We'll just move forward with it. I don't know. What did you think about that? Or did you just not really think about it?
I wonder, because when the movie was made, that's when things were like, it was adopting some of the stuff that was going on as the movie was being made. So any other movies that were made at a similar time and maybe are released later, maybe we'll see more of that. But I don't know if that's a well that people are going to go back to consistently. Yeah. I liked that they addressed it at the beginning, and then they're like, then they Deus Ex vaccinod in a way, so we didn't do the mask.
Yeah,
but I like some like Blanc is in the bathtub and he's playing murder mystery with famous people, Angela Lansbury.
He's playing Among Us with R.I.P. Angela Lansbury. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, doing I thought that it was interesting because to me, it was telling about some of their characters in seeing how they handled that situation. Like it was early indicators to me about like how each character dealt with that situation was indicative of their overall sort of personality and worldview going into the rest of the situation.
Yeah, I like Goldie Hawn's daughter. That's what
Kate.
Kate Hudson.
Kate Hudson. Thank you.
I didn't realize it until like at the very, very last minute when like they're introducing her character and there's a party going on and I didn't realize that there was a lot of pandemic kind of related stuff yet with it. Mm-hmm. Until like she stood up and then in the background of the party, there's a TV and it's talking about like COVID deaths. And I was like, oh, hey, yeah. that's good. And then we see Blanc and then we see them get to the thing. I was like, oh, okay. Now I know the period in which this movie takes place. And you know, like, I think maybe, again, it won't be a well that people go back to, but you talk about it as a period piece. I think it's interesting because it reflects maybe in like 20 years, like people might go back to this movie and be like, this reflects the time it was made and the people who were around at that time that it was made. In certain ways, like The Conversation, Francis Ford Coppola, like some of those films where they are tied to a time frame and it gives context to like what that was about.
I can see another shoot. I'm sure Hollywood is already workshopping it. but in the next couple of years, maybe give it another 3 years where we see like a major motion picture effort that sort of encapsulates 2020 and the pandemic as a dramatic retelling of it instead of, I don't know. I think people are going to pull from that for a long time. I think a lot of movies, I don't think like all movies are going to be like referencing it, but because obviously a lot do not even now. But I think there's going to be people that try to make the next outbreak, but with a COVID narrative.
The thing that I worry about this. So every night I go to sleep and I'm like, oh man, I'm
toss worried. And turn thinking about it.
I talked about the Twilight Zone, the Twilight Zone remake. And although I liked the three episodes that they showed, like there was one of them was where John Cho is like this pollster and he helps people get elected. And he sees this 11-year-old on TV talking about like wanting to give video games to everybody and like, why can't the world be a better place? So he gets this wild idea to like try to make this kid become president using his mom as a proxy, right? Because he's not old enough. But anyways, so then things happen and then he starts to act like a kid, a spoiled kid in the White House. And then it ends up being feeling like a ham-fisted, very like on the nose analogy about the people that run politics, and especially in this time frame, like 2019. I worry about people going and using aspects of the pandemic into things that are like just so on the nose and so ham-fisted minimizes it or just makes it a joke or gives maybe ammunition to people who are like, ugh, still talking about it, even though like 10,000 people a day are dying.
unfortunately, we still haven't gotten past a point where it's not something we still have to think about on a regular basis without having movies and things to remind us. But I think about other major events in our lifetime in the United States, like 9/11, right? Where that was such a pivotal point in history for our country within our lifespan. And what was it? What was it? Eight? years before they were like, all right, we're making movies about this now.
We're doing it now.
And we're releasing like three of them in the same summer for some reason. Like it was weird how that worked out.
Yeah. I think there's the difference though is 8 years past that event. Same thing with like making World War II movies, you know, fairly quickly after World War II, Vietnam, right? Let me take a step back. Let's leave the Vietnam example to the side here for a second. Like World War II, 9/11, those were fairly universally where people like, yeah, these, like we're united in this cause. We're united in this idea. And there was this almost like same thing with like a Sully movie where like, yeah, we want to see the success of the human heart. And like, you know, we want to feel together. COVID is just so polarizing.
And it's that divisive because there isn't one ground truth for the majority of society to be like, yeah, this is what happened. Too many people are still.
And that's why I left Vietnam to the side. Although I think
there's plenty of Vietnam movies out there.
There are plenty of Vietnam movies out there. But I think whereas like people were united as far as like a 9/11 or World War II, I think people were also united for Vietnam because I think it was universally disparaged. Like,
yeah,
basically everyone acknowledges like, yeah, this was a bad idea.
Sure.
Unless you're Kissinger, maybe, but that's not the point. You know, nobody wants a Kissinger movie. Is there a Kissinger movie? There might be.
I don't know. There probably is two of them. You can go to Blockbuster, find them. All right. Well, that's enough about that movie. While we're on the topic of war and divisiveness and the start of rebellion, I want to shift gears a little bit and discuss something that has been on our minds for a really long time and has been the content of post-episode Twitch streams for months.
Months.
But because we have not had an episode in 6 months, we have not formally discussed the series in its entirety. On Apathetic Enthusiasm, and it's a little show we like to call Andor.
Andor.
So we're going to talk all about our thoughts from several months ago on Andor, the show as a whole, some of our favorite parts of it. When we come back from this commercial break. All right. And we're back. Thank you so much. Whether or not you heard a commercial is strictly up to how well Brandon kept track of the time and whether or not he inserted one in ad break or not. We'll see. Hopefully you enjoyed that. We'd love to hear who sponsored your ad break. Anyway, we are talking about Andor. I almost feel wrong talking about this a little bit because I didn't like rewatch the series or something in preparation for this conversation. But this started out as a series that if I'm honest, I was not sure how much I was going to like it. I didn't know if I was going to be as interested in this series about Cassian Andor. But very quickly, my opinions changed, and this is now possibly some of my favorite Star Wars material in existence. I don't know where do we start with this conversation? Do we just jump in from the beginning? How do you want to talk about it?
Let's talk a little bit about the history of the show.
The history.
I feel like we're coming into this late, right? There are so many podcasts out there that have talked about Andor. While Andor was on, they're probably Andor podcasts. There are Andor podcasts. We're a little bit delayed when we're talking about this, but let's just go ahead and just say, if you have not heard of the show, Andor, Cassian Andor, is a character that was on in Rogue One originally. Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, which takes place in between, the Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. It's all about
right before the start of A New Hope,
leading directly into A New Hope,
like moments before the opening scene
of A New Hope. But it is between the two. But so when they came out a couple years ago and they said, we're going to do a show about Cassian Andor, my thought was, what? I didn't care about him when I watched Rogue One, let alone why would I care about him now? And so, and I think a lot of people felt that way. Yeah. Then what, the first three episodes were on, were all released at the same time. I had heard somebody, I think maybe it was John, saying like, oh, it's good. And so I'm like, okay, I'll go and watch an episode or two. I watched the three episodes. I'm like, this is really good. Like, I want to see what happens next with this character and where he goes, because he's a very selfish dude at the start. And in Rogue One, although he is selfish, he is a little bit more selfless. And more hopeful as a rebel.
Yeah. I think it's depending on what you appreciate about Star Wars and the aspects of the universe that you really gravitate towards, that could have a serious effect on whether or not you initially like this series. If you are a huge Jedi space wizards type fan, and the best thing for you in a Star Wars, I don't know, movie show is some lightsaber battles and exploration about the Force and things like that, Andor's not going to scratch that itch for you. If you love crazy, you know, droids and space aliens and seeing all kinds of cool like effects with different types of races and all this different stuff, like, yeah, that's probably not going to be something that you find very quickly or much at all in Andor. But if you really like a deeper understanding of, I don't know, the political unrest and the way that the Empire could sort of take control over an entire galaxy and have all these other, you know, planets and systems sort of have to fall in line, and at the same time have a small group of people that recognize that that's not right and they're rising up to try and fight back against that. If that idea of the rebellion and all of those things that are really core to the original trilogy, if that's something that you love about the series, then like for me, that is what really brought me into the show, was seeing the, I don't want to say initial sparks, but really like that very early on. And it's something you always wrestle with, right? Like, yeah, let's support the rebellion, the rebels, but like, are they terrorists? Like how do you draw the line on that? And there's definitely some story arcs in Andor where you're like, yeah, they're kind of rising up and fighting against the establishment, and there are consequences for doing that for sure.
Yeah. In the costs within establishing that type of thing, and the risks that are involved with that, and the calculated risks and the things you kind of be like, you know what, gonna let these people die because we've come too far, and if we don't let them die, then the bad guys are going to know exactly what's going on. So, that type of stuff. And like, how do you put a price on the heads of people with lives? But anyway, it ends up being a much more mature way of looking at the universe, right? It's
sure.
It's what I liked about reading the novelization of not the novelizations, just the novels of Star Wars. Like, it would get into more nitty gritty stuff. It would go deeper into like in intrigue. I love the original trilogy. I loved, I enjoyed parts of the the prequel. I enjoyed the sequel trilogy. I know I'm that's not necessarily the most popular place to be, but
like, you know what's funny about that, and put a pin in what you're thinking, but over time my appreciation of the prequel trilogy has gone up, which, like, when they first came out I was like, these are trash, these are not good Star Wars movies. And I don't know if it's my watching of most of the Clone Wars animated series, not to mention Obi-Wan, which I don't know if we talked about on this show because it's been so long, but that time period I appreciate a lot more, and I appreciate what George Lucas was trying to do. Mm-hmm. Even if I didn't love his execution at the time, I can go back and appreciate that more because of the story that he was trying to tell. And to a degree, the same thing for the sequels. But
I think I agree with you. Like, as a synopsis, and I think I've said this on here before. True. Like, as a Wikipedia synopsis of the prequel trilogy, what he was doing was good, right? Like, just made it concise, made it, you know, like concentrated, like orange juice, you know, like put it together. Ah, oh, it's good. That is some good OJ. But then when you see the actual execution, you see the acting, you see the directing of it, then it starts to lose it. Because I mean, like the opening intro of Attack of the Clones, shit, the Phantom Menace, right? Like, yeah. Trade disputes and all that type of shit. Like, that's not something we had in the original trilogy. They didn't talk about that. This was politically the end of an era, and how complacency creates the rise of a fascism, right?
Yeah.
On paper, great, right? In execution, not so much. And so I think that's why here with Andor and with Rogue One to a certain extent, because it's also written by Gilroy, like it gets closer to that, closer to like the yeah. spirit of what Lucas was going for in the prequel trilogy. Yeah. Anyway, I like it a lot. I don't need space lasers and lightsabers all over the time. It's good as a kid.
You talked about trade disputes and things like that, and how that sort of feels stale or not as intriguing, especially to a younger audience. It's one of the things I find most confusing about the Clone Wars animated series, is like this show is marketed for kids as like a Star Wars animated series, and there are entire episodes where like they don't fight any droids and they just like have a dispute with the banking colony, and they have to deal with senators and all this. And I'm just like, this is a kid's show? Like, what's going on here? But you fast forward past that into a time where the Empire has really gotten a foothold, the Jedi are gone, and all that are left to, I don't know, fight back are small pockets of a resistance. This small rebellion that forms, and really more so than in any other point, I think, in current Star Wars lore, right? The new canon, this is the earliest glimpses into that rebellion that I think we really get to see, in Star Wars content. And I just think it's phenomenal. I thought the show goes through different story arcs and different periods of time. And each one really gives you not just a glimpse of what it took for that rebellion to really take, like to emerge and to bring people into the cause. But like Five Long Years says in the chat, it highlights the downside of the Empire when you have such a huge bureaucratic system that is trying to maintain control over not just a planet, but planets and star systems and galaxies and all of these different groups and types of people and the amount of red tape and bureaucracy that actually gets in their own way and prevents them from being effective. I think it's really interesting and interesting to see from the perspective of a person who has worked in large bureaucratic organizations with a lot of red tape and rules that sometimes prevent us from being as effective as we can be. And so, I don't know. I thought that was really cool and really interesting.
I think,
I don't know. It's just such a good show.
Yeah.
The whole prison sequence, everything that happened with the prison. I love that. Like if that was a mini series on its own, I would think it would be fantastic.
Yeah. I wanted to make bring up a point about the Empire coming to strength and Empire losing its grasp and some of the triggers on that. I think it's interesting. Andor's flashback stories where he's on the planet as a young boy, a Republic ship crashes and, when he meets Mara, Marva, and she's like, you gotta come with me. Like they'll kill you. Right. So like even the Republic ships before the Empire took over were bad. Right. And so like the Empire, there's a little bit of an aspect of exploration here. I don't think it was fully fleshed out or maybe not obvious, is that the Empire just adopted the system that the Republic had the entire time. And like, it's just evil with a different flavor. The whole thing with like the Jedi becoming bureaucratic and kind of complacent, right? Like that was, you know, peacekeeping and, diplomatic escorts, right? That's how limited they were. Because, I mean, even, what's her face? Mon Mothma, right? Like, she's a senator and she is fighting the power that is. And all of those elected officials throughout the galaxy, they were there before the Empire.
Yeah, a lot of senators that were there before and are still there serving after. Even you look at like, what's his name?
Luthen?
The senator Amidala. Not Amidala. That Jar-Jar. Adopted Organa.
Bail Organa. Yeah.
Bail Organa. Yeah, like he's still working in the Senate like for years and years after Palpatine takes over and stuff. So it's, I don't know. But that's how they knew to try and like deal with things, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it is a good show. Looking forward to the second season. That's when we'll meet Alan Tudyk's robot character and just see how it ends. See how Luthen's speech, Stellan Skarsgård, like his speech about like, what have I given up? Like such a good abbreviated explanation of like, this is the cost of rebellion, for some folks.
We talk about, we're getting into 2023. That also means award seasons are starting to gear up in terms of like Golden Globes and Emmys and Oscars and all of those things. I'm really curious if this show gets any love on any of the major TV awards, whether that be Emmy Awards. There's so many outstanding performances. Andy Serkis, like we talked about it for weeks in post show Twitch chats and things like that. Sarsgaard again, even Diego Luna as the Cassian Andor. Like, I mean, there's so many great performances down to like supporting characters. So I just I would love to see this show get a little bit of love this award season. I don't know if it'll happen, but I'm really hopeful.
One last thing about Diego Luna in Andor's character. Again, we didn't care about this character enough to want a series with him. But his growth, I think, is so cool. And I think him as a leader, like I think I don't have a better example of a character in media that shows the importance of influence in knowing not to always do things on your own, but to get the people that are best suited for something to do it. And like how much of a skill that is. It's a soft skill, and it's hard to like describe it without becoming ham-fisted and direct and then telling and not showing. But there are like certain moments in the series where, like, for an example, the Andy Serkis moment where he's like, it's not me. It needs to be you. Like, you need to be the one to motivate these folks because they look up to you. Like having that presence of mind to put the power and to motivate and to influence. It was just, it's really cool. It's really cool. Anyways, great show. Go check it out. Great. Disney Plus. It's going to win a bunch of awards on this podcast anyway. So
yeah, it better. Okay. We're gonna wrap the show here in just a minute. But speaking of Star Wars content, did you watch the what was it? Tales of the Jedi on Disney Plus?
I watched.
It was short. It was animated. It was just little vignettes of the Jedi.
I watched a couple episodes of it. I was interested in just a few, one or two of them. I liked the one with Waddle. Or Yaddle.
Yaddle, yeah.
The female Yoda, which we never ever see again, but we get to see her fate in that. And so I wanted to know what happened to Yaddle.
I realized that Ahsoka probably doesn't have a lot of like you probably don't have much of an attachment to that character just because you haven't watched the animated series. But
I did. I did like that one episode with her and her clone friend. I didn't have the context. I don't know enough about that character because I didn't watch the Clone Wars. But
yeah,
I liked that, and it helped me be like, okay, let me look up more about these characters.
Yeah, we have an Ahsoka live action series that's on its way. I'm very curious to see how that's received by fans and how that goes, right? Because even when I think season two of Mandalorian came out, I wasn't as invested in that character as I am now, having watched almost all of the Clone Wars. I'm very curious to see how that character kind of gets added into the mix. Because it just has always felt like this character that is super important in the animated stuff. But any live action, she's suddenly gone or nobody talks about her. So I'm curious to see how that all gets, you know, sort of remedied. But I don't know. I between Obi-Wan and Andor, very happy with the recent Star Wars offerings from the Big Mouse, direct Disney Plus. We'll see if they can have the same sort of success with a theatrical release, if they ever give us another one. But for now, yeah, good stuff.
For now, good stuff. And for now, that has been our episode of a new episode of Apathetic Enthusiasm. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you want to hit us up, going back to those call outs at the beginning, hit us up on Twitter at Apathusiast. I'm at Barnyard Cruise. He's at Juggle Mino. You can hit us up there. Shoot us comments. Or when I post an image of this over on Twitter, you can comment on it too. It doesn't matter. Head over to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever. Leave a review. You can if you want. You don't have to. It's fine. But if you stuck with it, if you are an international RSS listener, you listened to this and you stuck with it and you liked it, I'm surprised because, I mean, we rambled on a lot, but you're the best. And, stay tuned. If you want us to maybe a show, something you want us to cover, something, let us know. We're game. We are game.
Yeah. If you're an international RSS listener and you've gone this far, hop over to Apathetic Enthusiasm, hit that subscribe button. We will be making more of these during the Rick and Morty off season. So, glad that you're here, and thank you so much for listening.
Woo! Until next time, everybody. I am Brandon.
And I'm Travis.
Okay. See you later.